Hang on, have we done that?
Do you want to do that? I'm in John Street with Ali Williams and Paul Clark. Talk about Meltdown. And so my first question would be to Paul, which is how and why you chose to set up a club like that.
There used to be a thing at Chapter Arts Centre called a folk club kind of on Sunday nights, and it wasn't really working. So a couple of us, three of us, were asked to do something on a Sunday night. I was a frustrated singer-songwriter who'd go into very precious folk clubs and be told that that's not folk. Aid Roper, a friend of mine, played in a rhythm and blues band but wanted to play all his indie songs and other things. Another guy, Steve Todd, was into all sorts of music and wanted to find somewhere to perform to what he did. So we came upon the idea, taking the fact that I used to run a folk club in Birmingham University, of taking that format of having a special guest every week and then anyone being able to come along, as long as they got there early enough and book themselves in a performance, to be a floor act, effectively. The difference being that we just exploded the content. So we made sure our headlines were synth rock bands from Swansea or a juggler or a hurdy-gurdy player in the first few weeks. Or we deliberately skewed towards established musicians who wanted to do something different. So we had Laverne Brown, who was a really great soul singer, who wanted to do a blues set, really raw blues set, so he'd come along. So we came up with the idea of this format and that content, and it took us several weeks to think of the name. The first night we were not the folk club, we were called. But then we thought of the name after an agonising 3 hours of Meltdown. Interesting, it was several months prior to Chernobyl, and we nearly changed the name when the Chernobyl disaster happened. But Meltdown, as in melting down barriers between all kinds of music and performance. And we had no clue if it would work, and we just put posters around, handwritten, saying, just do anything. This is a space, do anything, come along. And got in touch with certain friends to almost cement the variety from the beginning by getting their involvement. But people came out of the woodwork, amazing musicians of all kinds, and other performers, which made it really special that it was not just musicians.
And I presume that allows musicians to play with other people. And did they have jam sessions? Did they cross over and mingle?
Yeah, I've got a cassette tape we did. We did a little mini documentary of early Meltdowns where we recorded people rehearsing in the loo. Sort of kind of jamming on Casio and violin. We were in Chapter Bar downstairs, and there's a big bar or big area outside of that. And you'd come along on a Sunday night, we were on Sunday nights, and there'd be loads of people sat around jamming. Someone who'd written a song and some funk bassist and some drummer who was just practicing whether we could do that. There's a guy called Dan who played spoons, and he'd just come along and jam in with every act going, whether it was there's a big brass band we had 1 week, and then another week we'd have a sort of blues outfit, and he'd always be playing spoons, and we'd get him a microphone, Den's microphone, that would sit at the front. So it was bizarre and exciting, lots of stuff going on. And the way it worked was that people who were just starting out, like three friends of ours who were saying there aren't enough women performers coming up, said, well, you're a brilliant singer, what? So they formed the Milkshakes, an a cappella trio, who are amazing, and used us to try out their stuff and develop their act. So you had people who were doing something new, and then you'd have established musicians who were just wanting to branch out. They were in their covers band or their blues band, and they wanted to do something different. And of course, that applied also to comedians, also applied. You look at the Chapter Comedy Explosion, which included Rob Brydon back then, who used to come along and...
Can you remember how No Fit State got involved? What's the first memory of that?
My first memory is being really pleased because there are all these jugglers suddenly turned up out of nowhere called Balls Up, who were just practicing their juggling routines very entertainingly. I can't remember the exact acts to begin with. My vivid memories are probably a bit down the line. And I can't remember, I think they changed their name to No Fit State Circus by then. You changed your name to No Fit State Circus. I remember vividly the knife throwing routine, largely because I was sat at the front and it was a very scary, scary place to sit with Nick Aragua and Uncle Sam throwing knives at Nick Aragua, who would throw them back.
So that was in 1988, because that's when I was fundraising. That was actually a benefit that night.
Yeah.
For the trip to Nicaragua.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, that was... And actually, another feature of the Early Meltdowns was the number of benefits we did for different causes, and that was a brilliant one, because it kind of united... the act was kind of embodying the benefit. And it was really funny and really politically sort of astute. I also remember when we first were invited by Chapter, because Meltdowns were packing out every Sunday, to go into the theatre, and of course that also gave space for No Fit State to work on routines. And I remember, I don't know if this is a hallucination or an actual memory, of standing between flaming torches to...
It's not a hallucination.
It's definitely funny, yeah.
I remember putting you there.
It was. And I think it was Talking Heads Burning Down the House playing away. That was amazing. And it was so part of that excitement to Early Meltdowns, was we never have a clue what No Fit State would be up to next time they came along.
I remember that we didn't have much of a plan, but if it was a sunny day or a dry day, we'd go out in the garden on a Sunday afternoon and say, so what are we going to create for tonight? And sometimes it would be sort of routines or acts that we were working on or already had ideas for. And other times we'd have no idea what we were going to do, and we would just try and make something stupid, just go down there and try it out. So it was really great for us to use that as a sort of platform where we knew there was always going to be an audience who quite liked us because they'd seen us do some things that they'd enjoyed and were quite tolerant if we went and just tried out any old thing. So I remember one night putting Tom inside that tiger outfit and creating a routine where we forced him to jump through a hula hoop or something in a tiger outfit. I don't know if you remember that one.
I think
it counts as one of Tom's
most...
Deep
in my subconscious. I thought it was a dream.
Yeah, I think it counts as one of Tom's most embarrassing moments, so...
I mean, the other great thing was, because you were doing all this stuff, other people got that it wasn't just music. So we had Ross McKinney, who was an American guy studying Welsh, who'd come along and juggle to Elvis Costello songs or something. We had Hell's Fairies.
Yeah, I remember the Hell's Fairies, because they came to the same juggling club, and they were from Gilwyn, up in near Crickhowell. They used to come down, and we all worked together. And I remember them developing an act that they also tried out at Meltdown.
Yeah, and another thing we started doing was taking it on the road. So we went to the West End Arts Centre in Aldershot with Hell's Fairies, amongst others. So it created a little sort of mobile Meltdowns that could go places. So. It was really exciting. And I think gradually we were asked to be part of the development of the Summer Festival and the Bay Fiesta and stuff, and at the same time No Fit State was sort of, you were growing. I kind of lost sight a bit of you every time I see what you're doing. It got bigger and there were loads more people, and we were encouraging No Fit State to be involved. There's a few obstacles along the way with that.
Us falling out with the programme, I think, couldn't have helped.
But I think myself and Debbie Manley, who was a committee member at the time of that, and that was getting more towards the end of the 80s, early 90s maybe, sort of had words, because it's crazy, just amazing.
Well, it wasn't actually No Fit State that had fallen out with them. It was Balls Up Jugglers, when it was the larger group, and it was about a cycling event that they had on. And they wanted to hire all the unicyclists, and there were about 20 of them at that time doing it. and they wanted to pay like 50 quid for 20 unicyclists, and we said, no, we're not doing it for that amount, you need to pay a bit more. And that was and that was when Mike said, well, if you don't do it, you'll never work for Cardiff again. And we went, just you wait and see, mate. You're not the, you may be in charge right now, but.
So is this about the period when Cardiff started its street promenade?
It was around that time.
Precinct is what I mean.
Yeah, there was actually a festival of street entertainers, and
A little bit later, the Festival of Street Entertainers, because I know that that had happened in like maybe 1985, and we didn't work in Cardiff for the council. We worked in Cardiff all sorts of other places.
Yeah,
between about 1985 and maybe 1989 when we won the Street Entertainers Award.
That's right, from Paul Morocco.
And we'd entered.
As
a random sideways and. I'd won it, and it was a bit like, well, there's not much you can do now.
Well, were they importing people for those street shows, or mostly local talent? Or were they
it was an international street festival, right.
And there were people from all around the world, which made it doubly strange that Cardiff's the most amazing kind of up-and-coming thing wasn't part of it. So
we made friends with Mike Chubb later.
Yeah, and I'm glad of that, because we were busy trying to infiltrate and make that strong connection.
Yeah, the funny thing was, it wasn't actually No Fit State that had...
Yeah.
It wasn't... it was Pete Wells who'd had the conversation with Mike, who was one of the representatives of Balls Up, but never was involved with No Fit State, so it was a kind of leftover historical thing.
Yeah. Good that it got resolved.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think for Meltdown was really important was how the dream was just anything would walk through the door, and that's what No Fit State really embodied, and I think that influenced jugglers and other people, also influenced comedians coming along.
Comedians and magicians, all sorts down there.
Yeah, Terry Chin used to come along and do strange magic, kind of bizarre in his very dour Welsh accent kind of magic things. And we built a link with Agraman, the human anagram, who runs the Buzz Club in Chorlton in Manchester, which he used to send us people like Joe Brand and others when they were just starting out for 80 quid.
And we had Jo Brand in our blue tent when she was just starting out, along with Hattie Herridge and Lee Evans. That was the bill, and they're all really famous superstar comedians now.
Yeah.
That
sounded amazing.
That's quite interesting, because when I first moved to Cardiff in the 90s, I'd been messing about with the comedy circuit in London. And the first thing I noticed when I got to Cardiff was there weren't really many venues. Mm. I mean, you know, they weren't stand-up venues or any kind of music hall thing. And it sounds like Meltdown was a unique venue in that sense and got its own reputation.
Mm.
So you didn't have to know who's going to be on this week. You're going to go to Meltdown because it's going to surprise you.
Yeah.
And you might be in one of those glorious live moments that you miss it because you had to be there.
Yeah.
Because someone's doing something unique.
Yeah.
I'm sort of so this is more than a question.
Yeah.
But I'm sort of saying it because in the 60s I worked in Cousins Music Club, and they in the all-nighter session is when the real jamming music got on. People would come down from Ronnie Scott's. Mm. You know, a jazz musician playing with Roy Harper or something. You know, they were just. That's an unusual venue for talent, isn't it?
Mm.
So, my next question is, how long were you in Chapter before it either progressed or moved out?
It was interesting because we ended up moving out because there was a difficult relationship with the bar manager. We were really succeeding in terms of almost too much. And when we chose to do things elsewhere, he would react badly and behave badly towards people involved in Meltdown. We were non-profit making.
He thought you were his project, that belonged to Chapter.
And that was so totally clearly not the case. So it was sad. And we were there for about, I think it was 3.5 years. Maybe 4 years.
Yeah.
And then we moved to Club Ivor Bach, the Welsh club, and who really wanted us, and it proved to be a fantastic move. And
it's not a great club, is it?
Yeah, based ourselves in the downstairs bar. But at Christmas, then, we'd have a three-floor venue to take over. So we'd have Wonder Brass, a Valleys-based community kind of jazz, brass, soul,
still going,
band who are still going, yeah. So 25-piece in the middle floor, and then indie upstairs and folk downstairs, and then the folk would change to hip-hop downstairs, and there'd be something else upstairs. So it became a really good crucible for stuff. Different feel to Chapter. Chapter years were amazing, though, because we'd riff off things like the Magdalena Project for Women or the Chinese Festival, where we got the Guo brothers to come and play for us. There'd be lots of cross-collaboration. Club Evil was amazing in another way, in that loads of Welsh language acts started coming our way as well. So a lot of people, Catatonia played their first ever gig at Meltdown as a floor swap with Keris very drunk, because all her friends had been playing it with alcohol. So you had this, but it's a launch pad for lots of contacts.
Lots of people.
Yeah,